So, we're going to start with the agenda, and I'm going to make a motion to approve the agenda with, but we're going to scrap. But what I'd like to forego is the minor subdivision discussion. We have a lot in our plates tonight, and sort of, but the old moral is you don't have to eat everything on your plate, and I'd rather we focus on the public hearing stuff at hand. So that's a lengthy motion. Someone want to second that?
Second, John Varanth.
Okay, is there any discussion on that from the commission? Okay, then let's take a vote and we'll go. Let's try and keep our alphabetical if we can. So Matt Cochran, aye.
Ina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Did you hear that?
Yes.
John Varanth, aye.
Okay, did we hear from Elena?
I don't know. Is Elena's not in the room, is she? No, she's.
Oh, is she on?
Sorry, I might have muted. Let's see.
I think she's having some. Okay, we're just going to go with that and move on to the minutes. So minutes for February, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes. We'll need a second.
I'll second that.
Is there any discussion from the PC on the minutes, changes you need to make?
Who seconded? I couldn't tell who seconded.
Colleen.
Sorry. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, we gotta use our name.
All right, then let's take it to a vote. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
I had a minor correction.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I was muted. Very minor. Again, Peg does an excellent job capturing all this, but on page 2, paragraph 6, the first sentence basically says minor subdivisions are prohibited by the ZO and SD, which was zoning ordinance and subdivision ordinance. That statement is factually incorrect, and I think what the intent was to say that they were not provided for in the zoning ordinance and subdivision ordinance. Does anyone recall differently? I didn't have time to check the recording.
No.
Then I would move that we just change that from prohibited to not provided for.
Okay.
Okay, do we need to second that as a motion or how do we play that?
I think we could take.
It requires a second.
Okay. I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
John Varanth, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay. Is Elena still off screen? Okay, we're going to go with that. That's a majority. So, so next on the agenda is we're going to go to two public hearings, one on vested rights and the other on boundary use adjustments. I'm just framing it right now, and then we're going to have a discussion on those. And I know they're a bit complicated because we have some motions And afterwards, depending on what comes up, we'll decide if we will vote on those tonight. There could be the case that we need a further hearing on it with the new information that's come to our attention. Does that sound about legit for you, Lee?
It does. We've got to hear what the people have to say first before the commission can continue to discuss this. So hearings have to be the first order of business.
Okay. So I'm going to separate this into two separate public hearings. The hearing that I'd like to make a motion to open now is one for vested rights. The information's been online, so the public, you have been able to look at that, and we welcome your statements. I guess we need a second for that. Or how do we do this? I always forget.
Yeah, I'll second to close the Planning Commission meeting and open the public hearing.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
All right. So if you have a statement, please raise your hand virtually or turn on your screen and feel free to tell us what you have to say.
Anybody here who wants to speak, just can come up and speak in the microphone if you want.
Sorry, I could not hear that.
Right over here. I'm just letting people know that they can speak in a microphone at the table.
Is there any way to turn up the volume on the speaker by chance, please?
Okay, if there are no public comments, there is one comment from Ray Nelson. I wonder if someone has that on screen that they can read out loud. Do we need to read it out loud?
I would like to make a motion that all Planning Commission, I mean, I've read it, so.
I read it.
I think we should read it.
Okay.
Or at least show it. You better show it.
Can we show that?
So I don't know if you have that on your screen, Peg, but
I will have it up, but I don't have it ready to go this second. Give me a minute. I'm not sure which screen I'm looking at.
I can read it while you get it on screen, if that's helpful.
Go ahead.
Okay, so part of Ray Nelson's comments on the vested rights draft ordinance is in paragraph 154.04, which states, "Must I build in strict accord with the approved plans?" He says, "I believe this goes into more detail than is practical. Such detailed changes will not only result in construction delays and greater contractor expenses, but is not necessary. The town does not have qualified resources, personnel, or timely responses to such minor issues. Will the town's resource be versed in mechanical, electrical, HVAC, structural, or other code requirements that allow them to make reasonable assessment of a change? Will they have proper licensing to make such decisions? And if so, so what? Is it really necessary to micromanage such a change? How long would this process delay construction and increase costs? This will put building permits and completion dates at risk. It is my belief that the county inspector has this responsibility, and any further detail is mostly irrelevant unless it involves changes to site plan, building footprint, intended use, building height, setbacks, and things of a greater nature, as might be outlined in other ordinances. Boulder Town should not be in the business of house design." That's Ray Nelson.
Oh, brother.
Okay, any other comments?
Mark, Nelson,
which one?
Any one of them.
The green, if it's long as it's
green. Oh, it's got to be green. Yeah, that's fine.
They're all green.
Yeah, they're all
green. Okay, Mark Nelson. This time around, you're giving us a lot to. Time around, you've given us a lot to kind of review. Most of my comments are about, I think that you guys are moving way too fast on all these items. I don't think you're ready for hearing on these items. Now, we tried to follow this a little bit, and now Matt Cochran said this is all online review, but we didn't find it all online review in a timely manner. And I barely got through. Besides all the stuff you have to read, you have to have time to digest and think things through and research some of these things. Now, I just barely got through what we did get provided for us. And then as of today or maybe yesterday, there was a whole other revision by Lee Nillis. Well, this is not the way to do things, folks. If you're going to revise it, day before the meeting, you need to have another hearing or postpone it or cancel and take that until things are ready. These comments, these changes that Lee Nillis made, with his talks with John Baranth, they're fine. They should have come out like weeks ago, update for the meeting. It's not no good. I think, reading over this, you're requiring 10 days for people to have all the documentation in it, for these permits. And I think that would be a reasonable time for you to have all that available for public review. 10 days would be more reasonable. Not the day before the meeting. And I'd like to see adopt that as a policy that if you can't have all the documentation together 10 days before the meeting, you should cancel the meeting and table for the next go around with people time to do it. I'm not really convinced that the board itself has had time to review and think about these things. Right? I really don't think the board really has had time to think these things over. These are important matters. So that's basically my comments on the best rights ordinance and on that goes for the changes to the subdivision ordinance too, but I think it also applies to the best rights ordinances. I just don't think enough time has been allowed for these, and these are the only things I think have been moving too fast on. I think it takes a little more time. There was one thing in the vested rights ordinance that was on 151.11c, where no vested rights remain, all fees paid, obtained approval, deemed forfeited, absent reserved, and required, fulfill any conditions associated with planning the project, and development, et cetera, I didn't quite understand.
Which one?
What that was all about. 151.11.
Yeah.
Under C and number one on there and two. So I think I understand that then on the next page over on 154.04. Talking about pay may be imposed and an applicant may be required to remove work that's not recorded with the approved final plans. Well, I want to point out to you, we've known this for a long time. We have there's no structure in any of this for any fines. We have no enforcement fines. There's no delineation of what those fines might be. So that's just shouldn't even be in there. Right, if you're going to have it in there, it needs to have some kind of a reference to what, enforcement of that, what it would be, and the structure of that, because it's not a fine may be imposed. I remember that, 35, 40 years ago, after the first planning commission, they told us to avoid words like may and could. But generally speaking, that's all I got to say about that, this hearing. You know, like to say, I would like to say, I just like to say, you know, I think you need to take more time with these issues. And if you're not ready for the hearing, don't just say we want to get this hearing. We're going to schedule a hearing, and then we're going to fix it in the meantime. You know, you should, when you schedule a hearing, when you vote to have a hearing, you should have everything ready then. Not say we're going to schedule a hearing and then get it right between, you know, when you decide to have the hearing and when you have the hearing. I think you have things. You can have a hearing, have it right, have it out there for people to see before the hearing, not the day before. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Anyone else? Okay, unless there's anyone else, I'm going to make a motion to close this public hearing.
Second.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
Elin Hughes, aye.
Okay, and before we go into discussion on that, I want to open the public hearing also. I want to make a motion to open the public hearing on the boundary adjustment ordinance.
Second.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
Okay, Peg, can you get that one on the screen?
This is my speedy computer right now.
Okay, great, thank you. So raise your hand virtually or go to the microphone or turn on your screen and start speaking if you have comments on this.
I'm not seeing any raised hands.
Okay, then I'm gonna make a motion to close this public hearing. Yep.
Okay. I was going to say Ray is now, Ray Nelson is on the, in the meeting. I don't remember if he had a comment regarding this or not.
I don't think he did on his written form, but.
Okay. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
So I'll make a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll second that. Tina Carlson.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
Okay, so in acknowledgement of what Mark said, for sure, you know, this is a lot of information. And, you know, we are not committed to voting on it tonight because we realize a lot of new information came in and we're still assessing whether, you know, we need to require another public hearing next time on it because there are a lot of motions that we need to go through right now. But we'd posted it and we needed to go through it and at least hear something. So that said, let's see, I think, I don't know whether to start with you, Verant, or Lee, or how we want to go start going through this, but I'd like to go through it, of course, motion by motion. And start digging in on it.
All right. Well, Lee and I spent quite a bit of time between meetings trying to productively clean some of this stuff up. Since these two had drafts going to public hearing, Lee correctly pointed out the best procedure at this point now is to go through it basically clause by clause and accept motions to amend what we sent to public hearing. I would like to just kind of really clarify, because I caused some unnecessary confusion sending this stuff to Peg on short notice, which Mark correctly commented on. I think in the future, it's best if we have private conversations with Lee, try to work out worth basically between a commission member and staff and make sure that we're on the same page. It's going to be best to keep that basically as private communication, unless it gets to something that we do want to send to the whole commission through either Lee or Peg as our staff in advance. So I don't want anyone in the process to feel that I'm excluding them. I think you had said it was helpful to get these motions out in front of the planning commission members to see in advance, but it does cause confusion if we do that. So I think it may be better to minimize that. That said, I can start going through that vested rights ordinance with what I would like to put as motions before the planning commission, and Lee certainly is welcome to give alternatives opinions. I respect that very much. So
can we take a bigger picture moment here, given the comments that were received, and just address those four comments?
Sure. Why don't you do that? And then
That can be done awfully quickly. Kind of going in reverse order, there was the thing about time, which I think we are all cognizant of, and the commission's going to have to decide what to do. There was apparently some confusion about sub C in 151.11. That may be just because it's hard to read in the marked up form. But I guess that the commission members should take a minute to look at that particular clause or that particular sub item and see if they have questions. I think that it may be unfamiliar, but I don't think that it's unclear. Third thing in this is the thing about the fines. And there probably should be a cross-reference to the enforcement language. There a better cross-reference to the enforcement language, and that could be added easily. The most important comment was the written comment about we don't have the resources to review these plans. And if you read that comment, you'll see that he's referring to the mechanical code, et cetera. And the reality is, I got a cat here that I got to remove. Reality is that this doesn't touch those things. If you read 154.03, do vested rights exempt development from changes in building codes? Usually not. That would be a no if it wasn't for the state legislature. Vested rights only provide protection from changes in land use regulations. That's been in there since the beginning of you guys looking at these drafts. It is an awfully clear statement. Changes in building codes usually still apply. Again, that would be they still apply, except that there is a 10-year exemption in state law for single-family dwellings built on an approved subdivision lot. And since no subdivision lots have been approved in Boulder since the legislation was adopted, it's a clause that doesn't apply in Boulder at this moment. And so when you go down to 154.04, must I build in strict accord with the approved plans? Yes. It's exactly what Mr. Nelson said. You know, if there is a change in the building footprint, if there is a change in the use, then yeah, it has to, there's a change and you have to deal with that change from the plans. There was never any other intent here. And I guess that I did not sufficiently clarify that with people. It seemed to me that this was pretty darn straightforward. But when we say that you're building in strict accord with the approved plans, you are building in strict accord with your land use approvals. And I have a motion, I have some amendments that I sent to PEG to try to make this even more clear than it was. But upon reflection, I'm going to say the sentence that vested rights only provide protection from changes in land use regulations is a pretty darn clear statement. And maybe I should have pointed that out a bit more adamantly, more vigorously than I did. But there is not the possibility of, other than this weird exemption provided by the legislature that doesn't apply in Boulder at the moment anyhow, there never was any intent that if you deviate from the mechanical code or the plumbing code or whatever, that you do anything other than work it out with the building inspector the way things always have been. This is about you saying, hey, I told you this was going to be a beauty salon, but I've decided instead that it's going to be a restaurant. Or, you know, this is about the big stuff that gets approved, where the building is, how much parking there is, the things the planning commission is responsible for. And the plan that you get, the plan that you approve, is a contract between you and the developer. And you have the right to dictate how that will be changed. It's your contract.
Okay. I'd like to respond to that, Lee. Thank you very much. I think we're progressing here. However, first I'm going to point out, as I had, I think, pointed out previously, in the month ago draft, the example that you had when you had all the parenthetical comments in there, you used changing the exterior light fixture as an example. And I had said, that's the sort of thing that is not under the town's jurisdiction. So I think we're now.
Sure it is. It's absolutely in the commercial development standards. It's right there, plain as day.
No, okay. So Lee, this is the second problem. We have wording here that as worded applies to single family dwellings, where we clearly, by state law, have no jurisdiction. So I think that first we need to make sure that we distinguish in this any of this discussion of vested rights between commercial developments where there are specific conditions imposed under the CUP and single family dwellings. The second one is that even for commercial development, unless we specifically stipulate that you must do X, Y, and Z, that you must paint the building dark green and have trees in front of it, we're still imposing conditions much stricter than we've ever had before that are not really consistent with trying to respect private property owners' rights to do things that don't harm the rest of the town. So I think we're moving closer, but I think I did want to point out that the wording as it is much more inclusive than you have alluded to just now.
I just don't see how that's true.
Well, I guess that's what we have to decide as a planning commission before we send this to town council that, so I guess we may have a battle of competing motions here. My inclination would be to make a motion to go to wording that simply says that the vested interests are limited to the scope of work as submitted in the application. I have some a little better wording written down, but the gist of that. It sounds like you have an alternative motion, and I'm certainly willing to let you go first.
Well, let me dig here. So I guess we're focusing on 15403 at this point and 15404. We need to be clear about where we are so everybody can follow, right?
Yeah, so let's do it that one. And I do want to go back to some of the earlier ones, but.
Right.
Do you want me to display the actual ordinance right now, the best right ordinance or your amendments?
Don't display my amendment, my emotions. That was private communication. It's nothing secret, but it's, but let's focus on the words of the ordinance on display.
Can you bring up the correct,
I'm bringing up the, I'm bringing up the corrected draft of the vested rights ordinance right now. Do you want me to bring up instead Lee's latest revisions?
No, because what we have in front of us is what we took to public hearing, which is...
Yeah, the corrected draft is what should be here.
Okay, do you see it now?
Yeah, can you slide it down to where we can see 154.02 and 154.03? Keep going. Okay, you're about there, just a little more. There we go. That's really where the crux of this conversation is right there. And everything else that one might discuss or one might change or not change revolves around your understanding of what 154.03 says. And in order to clarify things, I think we could change 154.02 just a bit by making it clear in 02 that that's also about the approval of land use permits, not about the approval of building permits or building code compliance. And the changes that I would propose, there are quite minor, but I really think before we wordsmith that we need to be really clear about people's understanding of what we're looking at here. And I think if I may paraphrase, and I don't want to speak for John other than just trying to get a summary here, is that this is extremely clear, explicit language about the changes that may be made in plans. And Boulder has never had anything like that. That's true. This is the law of vested rights as it exists nationally. The plans that you approve are a contract between the community and the developer, and any change in them is subject to approval by the community. And you know what I give you here is language that I have seen used and used. This language this was written and adopted in 2008. By a community that I worked for and have been in touch with ever since. And what I'm giving you here is what I know works. If we lighten up on this, well, then people will be making changes and you will have to decide. If a neighbor comes to you and says, hey, so-and-so changed what they're doing there with whatever development you can imagine, you're going to have to ask yourself, how do we deal with that? What's the process? How can we satisfy this neighbor who believes that something is happening that was not approved? And that may or may not be the case, but there has to be a procedure for figuring it out if such an allegation is formally made. And so this is the way you deal with the reality that, minor changes can happen. And, the reality is that John is correctly concerned about single family homes. What can change? What vested right does a single family home have? It has the right to be where it is. If I change the setbacks that you approved, are you concerned about that? If not, cool. But if the neighbor says, hey, town of Boulder, they said they'd be 15 feet from my line, and now they're only 10, what are you going to say?
Okay.
That's the reality that we're trying to deal with here.
Right. I think we're starting to focus on this correctly, so I appreciate that. We already have statutory setbacks. So I would take the position, if we say, for example, that your front setback has to be 30 feet, then anything from 30 feet, 35 feet, 40 feet, 50 feet, that's all acceptable. 29 feet isn't. We have an ordinance that gives a mandatory setback. We have a mandatory roof height. But I guess we have some big philosophical differences about how much detail should be in the ordinance. And again, I really respect what Lee's opinions are, but, to me, first, we have to distinguish between CUPs and single family homes, and then ag buildings, which are exempt, are virtually totally exempt.
Anyway.
So,
so John, what's your alternative?
Okay, so my motion on this would be to strike 154.04, 155, and 156 from the ordinance and renumber and replace with the words for conditional use permits or projects which require planning commission approval, the vested rights are limited to the scope of work described in the final approved version of the application. That would be what I would propose as wording to this ordinance.
And how do you see that as in non-legally speak as different?
Okay. First, that we're clearly applying it only to things where we have specifically approved. The planning commission, the zoning administrator, really doesn't approve the floor plan of a house. They don't approve the exterior finishes. They basically, we review on the application, we review that it meets the setbacks, and that's about it. So we're clearly applying this. That if we have approved a CUP for Ray Gardner's campground, and we said part of that was that he showed that he was going to put his building perpendicular to the road rather than parallel to the road, and we gave him points on the checklist. Okay, that his vested right is to put the building the way he showed it, but that is if he's silent on what color his building is, then we really didn't impose a condition on what color his building is. So that's what I'm saying. You know, I've tried to respect Lee's concern that, yes, once we approve a project, we have a contract, and also protect the property owner's rights that we don't stick our nose into business that is none of our business. And as I read this wording, if somebody really tried to enforce it, it would have applied to virtually any type of detail on the building. So that's the big difference.
And does what you're talking about apply to more than single family residences? You're talking about commercial properties too?
You asking me or Lee?
I'm asking you.
Okay. So I would say on a single family home, the state law basically now says we cannot regulate architectural details like exterior finishes, roof pitch, and so location of doors. They're not in our jurisdiction even. Interior layout of rooms. So really, in practice, about all we can regulate is that the building meet the building code, which is really should entirely be between the builder and the code inspector, who is properly trained to enforce the building codes. And other than that, our jurisdiction is limited to a maximum height and a setback. That's really all we can regulate as a town on a single family home.
Okay, and does what your change also affecting commercial development as well?
Well, okay, so I am willing to go along with saying, since we're talking here about vested rights, that the vested rights are limited to what was in the final submittal. I still think we don't need this detail of building in accordance with plans beyond what was actually considered in the approval.
Okay, so I'm not understanding because you're not answering my actual question.
Okay, I'll try.
Does this apply to commercial development as well?
My motion?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I said, for conditional use permits, which is commercial development, or projects which require planning commission approval, which is kind of catch-all to make sure there isn't something else that we approve but didn't involve a CUP, the vested rights are limited to the scope of work described in the final approved version of the document. So it applies really only to things that we explicitly approve as a planning commission, which in practice means things that get CUPs.
Okay, does anyone else in the Planning Commission have discussion comments about this at this point? Are you following what's going on?
I have a comment. This is Colleen. So does that change our commercial development standards that we developed? I mean, what happens to that?
No, it wouldn't. I'm saying that we're talking about vested rights, and the vested right would be when we go through those commercial development standards, the owner is making promises to the town that he's going to do this and this to get more points on the checklist. His right, and I would agree with Lee, that's a contract. We approved his project and he's agreed to do those things that he stipulated he would. But we remain silent on anything that we didn't discuss basically with him. And so a good example would be right now on Ray Gardner's RV park. We talked about the size of the building, the orientation of the building, the location of the building. We didn't talk about the floor plan of the building. So to my mind, he's got a vested right for what he agreed to build, but he doesn't have a obligation to use the exact floor plan of the office restroom building that he might have had available at the time that he submitted his request for approval, or even as far as I'm concerned, when he goes for a building permit and submits a floor plan. Because we haven't set any stipulations on that. So we should really be silent in terms of vested rights on that.
I guess the question is, how do you read this to be anything other than silent on the floor plan? There's no standard for the floor plan. They don't have to make a representation about it. He could have left it blank. Again, what this says is what you approve, and you can only approve or disapprove what you have a standard for. There was no need for him to make a representation about the floor plan of that building at all. You don't regulate it. We don't regulate it. The town doesn't regulate it. And so,
okay,
if the representations on the plans that are submitted deal with the standards, respond, I guess the best thing to say would be to the standards, then yeah, you are approving that. And like you use the example of the orientation of the building, if that's going to change, then it has to go back through the process in one way or another. The representation about the floor plan is meaningless because there's no standard for the floor plan.
Okay, but I guess I read words a little more legalistically. So right now, okay, I don't, it's 154.05A, mm-hmm. minor, and the words minor right there, dimensional changes. Mm-hmm. I don't know what constitutes a minor dimensional change of a building. And if I was a really strict reader of it, that would virtually mean any dimensional change of the building whatsoever. Minor material changes. Again, what's minor material change? I could read that as any change of materials, even though we made no stipulation. But as I say, so I think the wording here is far too inclusive and really inappropriate. I have worked on construction projects for many years. I have never, under any agency, and I'm talking about highly regulated facilities like hazardous waste transfer facilities, power plants, chemical plants, I have never seen any kind of reading where you have to go back to a government approval for minor dimensional changes and minor material changes. This is why I think it's way too inclusive, and anyone who try, it could lead to more problems if we ever attempted to enforce this kind of wording. So that's why I'm very strongly opposed. Anyway.
So you're telling me that if you move a power plant 15 feet from where the plans that were approved by FERC, et cetera, they're not going to have something to say about that? I'm sorry, John.
I don't know what you mean by moving a power plant 15 feet.
If you've got us, let's say that we're in the world of regulated utilities and you're proposing a substation, and it seems like when you get on site, it would be better to move it 15 feet closer to the neighbors. You're telling me that that's not regulated?
That is a major dimensional change affecting setbacks. That's not a minor dimensional change. That's what I'm saying. Minor dimensional change, somebody could interpret that as changing the gate from 4 feet wide to 5 feet wide. That's a minor dimensional change. Those things are done on construction sites all the time, and as long as they fall within code and they don't violate any explicit regulation, they are just made locally, you know, between the engineer and the contractor.
So is there some way that I'd like to come to more of a conclusion here and not just necessarily debate back and forth, but is there some way to organize this word-wise between minor and major changes, or is that already implicit in there?
Well, I think maybe we're going to have to work this up. One way is that we try to work this offline and come up with something that both Lee and I can recommend to the commission by next month. But my feeling is,
I would like to do that. There's a lot more here.
Yeah, if you wanted to spend about 20 minutes, I would say that we would go with that. Let me try to take that motion again. The vested rights are limited to the scope of work described in the final document. Really, we have to tie it to things that we have explicit ordinance stipulations on. And that would be basically conditions we impose in the CUP and things like setbacks, which are explicit in the ordinance. You can't change those. But beyond that, I know Lee's got a different philosophy, but if I move my building 2 feet further from the property line than the minimum setback, that's really not a town concern. Yeah, we got a note here to let Colleen speak. I'll be quiet.
Colleen?
I think the town is, microphones are muted or something.
Yeah, they're muted.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, so my only comment before we get too far with this and is, I know that, John, that you have been on different committees and you've been doing a lot of different things up in Salt Lake. I have a really hard time when you compare those things that you've done up there with what we're doing here in the town. And so I'm a little confused as far as, I don't know whether, anyway, I just wanted to make that comment. And I feel like I'm super confused basically by what's going on right now between you and Lee. And I'm just not sure that I understand your wording and opposed to what we're trying to do and what we've been doing with Lee. And I just want to make that comment.
Okay. No, I certainly appreciate that. I think in terms of comparing to other jurisdictions, I'm making any point at all, it is that we are being much stricter than other jurisdictions. I've looked at a few, there are a few ordinances, towns that have their vested rights ordinances now up on American Legal. I've looked at that, but I'm also referring to my experience with other agencies. So my point would be that I'm trying to make is we are being much stricter than other jurisdictions have found necessary to be, including things like, so that was my real point there. And
okay,
I
just have a small comment on that too. And this is really my only comment is when we brought Lee in, it was basically because of the formats that he was doing as far as this work that we're creating right now was done mainly so that Boulder could be Boulder, and we didn't want to do what everybody else was doing. We didn't want to look at other people's jurisdictions and what they were doing, because we've done that before and it becomes very confusing. And so when we brought Lee on, it was so that Boulder could do what Boulder wanted to do and what the town people wanted to do. And I'm not really sure. Most of the things that we have done in the last few years, the town seems to have been okay with what we're doing. I say that strictly from being at public meetings where I don't know whether people were confused or the fact that we generally don't get a lot of comments, because we have been working with Lee, and I'm hoping that we understand what we're doing with him, and that's really all the comment that I have to make.
Okay, I really appreciate that, and I think we all agree we want Boulder to be Boulder.
So in the meantime, can you take this offline, this discussion, until we get some clarity around it? Because right now, you know, it's not there, and we have many other motions we need to work through right now.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think we can speed things up if we just. Lee, how do you want to proceed on this? I think we should just take this back to a new draft and bring it back the next month, because I've also got that inconsistency at 151.11a and a couple other.
Right. Now, there's some things that are more minor that can be fixed. I don't think we should make any changes to the hearing draft without dealing with the major issue here.
Does anyone else have any comments? Does anyone else on the Planning Commission have any comments about this? mind if I ask that before we go on?
Honestly, I feel a little lost by the whole thing. This is Elena. So no, not for me.
Okay, I guess in trying to figure out the changes that John talked about and Lee tried to help us with motions, it was a little much to cover all, you know, all at once. So I think that Lee, my question for Lee is that the changes of and the motions that you suggested, if we did that, we would bring it back to another hearing. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
I think that's probably, I mean, you can argue over what's a substantive change and what isn't. If we correct a contradiction or clarify something minor, then a new hearing is not required. My reading of substantive is that if it doesn't change what happens on the ground, a new hearing is not required, but that's my particular reading. The point here, I think, is there is not clarity about the best way to proceed. And we need to go back to see if we can come up with something it's easier to be clear about. So I would suggest that the commission not take any action at this time, other than to agree that we will try to work through something that there's not really a difference to split here. It isn't that type of compromise. But work through something that is easier for everyone to understand, or at least that everyone does understand, whether it's easy or not, and try to try to make it not so esoteric about what the nature of, because what we're really talking about here is the nature of change, or the nature of changes, right? That's the bottom line, is what changes require some sort of public scrutiny and what don't. That's the bottom line. And
so another thing that I would ask, and I'm sorry, this is Colleen again, is I know that we talked about last week, you and John working together, basically. And so what I would like to see is, before we have these meetings, that there isn't something from you and something from John, because they don't seem to be the same. I may be missing something, but that before we come to the Planning Commission, that you're in line with each other, which I don't see, and it's becoming very confusing, I believe, for me and some of the rest of us.
Thank you, Colleen. I think that actually there was an amazing number of things that Lee and I came to agreement on in terms of, you know, some things he pointed out, reasons, and I agreed. Okay, I've learned something. Thank you, Lee. Let's move on. This is the major one where we just couldn't agree. And I'm hoping, I might just kind of ask people to comment. I think if the wording is cleared up that there is no way it could be misinterpreted to apply to things that we really don't want to be regulating, is that what everyone is happy with? So we maintain the idea of having approval, but we make sure that the scope is very narrowly targeted to the things we're concerned about.
I can agree with that.
I think for me, the language that Lee has written makes sense to me. The place where I need clarity is, like, John, if you could write out more the language you'd prefer so that we could have that in front of us, because it makes sense to me as it is. And the part that confuses me is exactly what the change is and why it's necessary. So I think it being in writing would be helpful.
Well, and we talked about too, I mean, I appreciate going through all, I have so much printed information in front of me right now, and being able to, it so that when it comes before the Planning Commission, that I love all this information that we get from Lee as far as what's crossed out, what's being put in, but we generally don't have something that's finalized. We're always looking at something that's in the process. And that to me is becoming very confusing. Each meeting that I come to, it seems to be more confusing because there's more, there's different input. And so I'd like to make that comment also.
So there's another possibility here, and I'm you know, speaking to how to handle, you know, all this information, and it's a lot of work. And we can also set up a separate work meeting in between our sessions, you know, 2 weeks in or something like that, in order to address these specific issues, bring the organization we need in and our own understanding. And then that in turn will cause a lot more clarity, I think, with the public as well, and everyone trying to keep up on it. Is that something that people would be willing to do? It's more work.
I'm totally willing to do that. I mean, I think we've talked about, and I do believe that COVID made things difficult because people really didn't want to gather, and that's totally understandable, and that things are changing a little bit. And I would like to see us have a couple of work meetings. I don't know if Lee has time, but and we've talked about this, there's so much information and things get pulled in. And, you know, I mean, I feel that way because we're going here, we're going there, we're going here. And it's just a little confusing. I'd love to have work meetings.
Thank you.
Lee, what do you suggest? What have you seen? What's the best way to handle this huge amount of information?
Well, we're only a little ways into the information here, although I honestly think that this may be the most difficult piece of what's in front of you that we've just gone over. My sense at the moment, if I may just trying to expand the box of the conversation is that I think that John and I agree on how to improve the language, or we agree mostly on how to improve the language about lot line adjustments and plat amendments. I don't think that's going to be nearly as confusing a conversation. And so I think we don't want to not get to that tonight, because we might get more resolution. On the vested rights, I don't think that a work meeting is going to clarify things, because this is abstract, right? Yeah. You may never use this language. It may never be raised. The whole chapter could go for a decade without the town of Boulder. Now, there are places where it gets raised almost weekly, but in Boulder, this could go for years without you using it. And I think the question, what John is trying to do, as I understand it, is make this suitable and appropriate for the scale of things in Boulder. And I think that it would be better if he and I have an offline discussion. And we come back to this one a month. I just don't see a work session being necessary on the vested rights. And my final point is that, you know, we've wandered off into the weeds of procedure here. And in trying to make sure that what the town does, the town's practices are consistent with state law and with best practices, we end up having to fiddle with a lot of the procedures. I didn't want to change anything in chapter 151 when I started this, but in the end, I couldn't see a way around it, because 151 was inconsistent with state law. And once you read it closely, not very consistent with common sense. And John and I talked about that and agreed that, you know, for a major project, you couldn't use the timeframes that were set in there. They wouldn't work. So we have to change 151, and the change has to be changed just because it was confusing to get it right. And changing that part of 151 then led to some other ideas that we got to maintain consistency. This is all very technical, and it's going to be tough to have a work session in which we actually get progress. If people want to have a work session, I think we need to get the minor subdivision that we're not going to talk about tonight dealt with. That's substantively way more important than any of the rest of this.
Okay. So,
and it also sets us up to move on to even more important things. So I guess I don't see a work session being productive on this stuff out here in the procedural weeds. I think John and I can come to some sort of conclusion about the vested rights thing.
I'd like to make a suggestion then, that, or a motion, that we set aside the vested rights for tonight. You and John work on it offline, come up with some clarity that we can actually focus on it for discussion next month. And in the meantime, we go through the land use adjustments right now and finish that off.
If we can, that would be great.
Okay. Do we need to vote on that, or can we just do this?
I think just do it.
Okay.
You can just do this.
Let's just do this. Yeah.
There's nothing formal about this.
John and Lee, I'd just like to make a quick comment that I think it was helpful. One of the times, it might have been about roads, when we had side conversations, to kind of come back and have different versions that we could all look at ahead of time, of sort of like, so if you guys have different ways you want to phrase it and you want to kind of send us sort of like an A, B, or C, I felt like that was helpful with our conversation. It was either a month or two ago.
I think we can do that. I think, you know, 90% of the time we'll come to some resolution. And if we can't, then there might be one item where we have to both present our case and you know, let the whole commission discuss it.
Yep. Thanks.
Okay. Shall we move on to the subdivision part?
Please.
The subdivision part is motivated to begin with by trying to become consistent with state law. But then when you work your way into it, you find that the town's existing subdivision ordinances are a mess. and other changes just kind of naturally present themselves. The draft that you had, and it's now labeled as the corrected proposed amendments regulating land divisions, talks about two things, one quite briefly and one at some length. The thing that it talks about briefly is property boundary adjustments, which are the adjustments of a lot line outside of a subdivision, okay? So if I have a parcel that is not part of a recorded subdivision, and I come into the ownership of an adjoining parcel, or if the owner of an adjoining parcel and I decide that we want to shift something around, say to accommodate an irrigation change or something like that, the parcel boundary adjustment procedure in state law lets the consenting owners do that without town regulation. Okay. So if you look at 152.115, it basically says outside recorded subdivisions, property owners may agree to adjust boundaries as provided by state law. Parcel boundary adjustments outside recorded subdivisions are not reviewed by the town. You should talk to an attorney or a surveyor. Okay. So the property boundary adjustment part of it should take no further discussion. It then says, and this is the part that is more complicated, although it's not really very complicated. Within recorded subdivisions, you must amend the recorded subdivision plat as required, again, by state law. Plat amendment procedures are then established in 152.116. The state law, the new state law about this is not clear. And I started trying to accommodate that lack of clarity by saying that we might have to have two different ways of proceeding here. One, where a public hearing is held about a lot line adjustment within a subdivision, and one where it's not. As John and I talked about it, he suggested, and I agree with him, that we should just hold a hearing on all of them. And if somebody comes up with some reason in state law why we have to waive a hearing, then we waive it. What this does is it shortens up the whole thing, leaves us with just one procedure instead of a procedure and a half, and really makes everything easier. And so the conversations we had at the looking down from the sky level, we agreed. And so in the memo that I sent about motions, there is a motion to replace the hearing draft with a very similar but simpler section 152.116 that just says we're going to have a hearing on every lot line adjustment. And I think that is the way to proceed. And so you have, we've had a hearing on a more complex version of this that nobody commented on, leading me to believe that we could simply, the Planning Commission could simply go ahead and say, let's change the code ordinances in this way, which involves changing, let me get the right piece of paper here. I know we have too many pieces of paper. There is a bit of a change that deals with the issuance of permits and subdivisions, trying to clarify that from some really bad existing language, and trying to set up the distinction between parcel boundary adjustments and lot line adjustments, trying to make it clear what choice a landowner has, and then moving on into the procedure for an actual plat amendment. You could adopt, in my estimation, what I gave you for the revisions of 152.005, and the deletion of 152.06, 152.011, replace 152.115 with the language that I talked about that shows the distinction between a parcel boundary adjustment, a lot line adjustment. And then instead of the version of 152.116 that was in the hearing draft, there is a new version of 152.116 that is very similar but much simpler, because it just says, hey, we're going to hold a hearing on all these. Here's what you have to put in amended plat, and you're done.
Okay.
This is the way to allow landowners within a recorded subdivision to shift their boundaries. I could do that if I own two lots, right? I could eliminate the boundary between them. If I have a neighbor and we're looking at the situation together, and the neighbor says, wow, it would be a lot easier for me if I could put my driveway right here, but unfortunately, we would need to shift the lot line 10 feet. This is the procedure you'd use, working with your neighbor to amend it. It requires that everyone in the subdivision and everyone who adjoins the subdivision be given notice. Requires the Planning Commission hold a hearing and decide if there's no adverse impact on adjoining properties or public infrastructure, that there's no violation of the code. If there's not an adverse impact, then the Planning Commission approves it. The Planning Commission chair signs it, and it's recorded. Okay. And that's, I think, a pretty good summary of what this does.
Yeah.
And so procedurally, we'd have to just go through each of those motions.
And there's really, at this point in time, only one motion. You're taking the hearing draft as it is, if you want to, and John may have something to say. He has some minor, or at least what I see as minor things here. But you would take the hearing draft as it is, and then someone would make a motion to replace 152, the proposed 152.116, with the version of 152.116 that was in the memo that you received on whatever date that was, March 9th. And so you could do this with one motion to amend and then one motion to send the rest on to town council.
Okay. Respecting Mark Nelson's comments, I think what we should do is have a clean draft in front of the Planning Commission that we read before we send something on to town council. But I think we should just definitely make motions on the changes we want to make. But I do think we should have a clean, complete draft. I think that was also Colleen's comment, before we send something on to town council.
So you're suggesting we vote on it next month, John?
I think what we should do is vote on potential changes. So I think the motion here is, Lee, could you, I think for everyone's benefit, since some of us may or not have seen the memo, what's your replacement wording for 152.116? Could you just either...
It's the wording that I sent to you after our conversation, so you should have seen it. And then I sent it out to everybody in this memo, the memo that's dated March 9th, 2022.
Yeah, well, Tina, I know, was confused this afternoon about it. So if we could just...
Yeah.
I think, and, are we looking at it right now? Isn't this what it is? What I have shared?
Is that the memo of March 9th?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's it. And this is the one that simplifies it. John and I talked this through. He pointed out correctly that there was very little difference between having the Planning Commission look at it at a regular meeting and having the Planning Commission hold a hearing on it, and that the time involved for the applicant would be, if anything, longer without a hearing, and that we could just make, without changing anything that actually happens, we could make it simpler. And so that is what I propose. And since if we follow the impulse to have a clean draft, then if somebody is willing to make a motion to replace what was in the hearing draft with what I sent in the memo, then we can put that in there and have a clean draft for people to look at next month. And then if there are other comments on what is in there, We could also talk about those, but that's okay. The only thing you would have to do to come up with a new clean draft is to
make that one change. I will enthusiastically make the motion to replace the hearing draft 152.116 A, B, and C with the I'll just say the 152.116 wording from the hearing draft with the version in the March 9th memo.
I'll second that. Is there any discussion from the PC on that before we vote? Okay, all in favor of that? Matt Cochran, aye.
Annie Hughes, aye.
Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
Okay, and then, yeah, let's get all that into one document. We'll put it on the agenda for next month as a clean piece.
Okay, real quickly, I think we probably should do this offline, but a couple other things on the subdivision ordinance. When I read it carefully, the 152.005D, you have a statement that there's a partial boundary additions as defined in state law are not subdivisions, nor can they be made within recorded subdivisions, which was very, very sensible until I looked at state law that says that the joining of a lot or lots, and they define lots as being what's in a subdivision, to a parcel does not constitute a subdivision as defined, does not constitute a subdivision as to the parcel or subject the parcel to the municipality subdivision ordinance. I think we have to really think through what there seems to be a contradiction there within state law. Mm-hmm. We could probably take that. Do you want to just take that one offline and we'll figure out what
we have? I think we have to take that offline because I am pretty sure that we can read another part of state law and come up with a different conclusion.
I think you're right.
I would, let's have you guys take that online because I couldn't follow John's logic on that either. And that's,
well, so you're trying to follow the legislature's logic.
Okay.
And that's challenging. You know, they make changes and they do not thrash through all the interconnections the way that we are trying to do here and make sure that all of the whole body of law actually hangs together. There is a place where they clearly define parcel boundary adjustments as not being within subdivisions. And then there's the language that John has, which doesn't use the terminology from either of the other parts of the statute. And so what the heck do you do? In the end, we are not going to go to the Supreme Court of Utah and say, hey, correct this for us. And we're going to have to decide what makes sense. But there's no reason to have the Planning Commission have to have a full-scale discussion of something that in the end is going to remain uncertain.
Sounds good. We'll take the other items I have offline too, Lee, and just bring a clean draft to the Planning Commission next month.
Okay. The question I have then is, do you think you need to rehear this one? Because these are not substantive changes. Fox, you could act on them next. You could act on them next month and send it into council, and nobody's going to say that this replacement is a substantive change.
Yeah, I think anything we do is going to be loosening up or omitting ambiguous language. So I don't think it's substantive changes. How do other people feel?
We're talking about the boundary adjustment thing again now.
Yeah, that Lee and I come up with a clean draft that addresses all the concerns I have about ambiguous wording, but I think it's we've not changed anything in the intent of the ordinance.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah,
the vested rights is a different beast, but
yeah, this is not nearly as complicated or complex as vested rights. Just isn't.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll bring a draft. Yeah. We'll get a draft out to people relatively quickly, and maybe this can be moved on to council at the April meeting. And then I guess there's a practical question of, do you want to set another public hearing on vested rights so that you would be able to act on it if we come up with something that people think makes sense?
That's probably smart.
Let's wait and see.
Okay, well, that gets you off to June. Or to May, at any rate. But,
well, I mean, maybe yeah. Towards the end of the meeting or halfway through, we can put it on. I think what's important is that we have, that work done far enough ahead of time so the public can go through it, so we can go right. through it, and so on. So it's really dependent on that. So if that commitment can be made, then I would say we schedule another hearing on it.
Okay.
And I suppose the nuts and bolts would be, can we have it 10 days out before the next one or not? That's really up to you and John. Yeah.
We can have it a week.
Okay. Let's do a week then.
John, can you clarify for me which part of the boundary adjustment thing you're hung up on? Just which, are you hung up on 116 or something else?
On the boundary adjustments, it's yeah. just okay. So on 152.005,
uh-huh.
There's some what we have there may or may not be inconsistent with another provision of state law, and that I think Lee is right. It's because state law itself is inconsistent. So that was one. I think we just need there were some minor wording things about the in 116E, trying to just make sure that we didn't get something left out. That's my main concern there. And Lee Nels clarified that we do have a separate town fee schedule. So at some point, the town's going to have to set a fee because we say that you have to pay a fee for a lot line adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
So we should turn this. I just want to be sure that we don't do what the state legislature does of changing one part of the ordinance and not realizing we've caused another contradiction.
Right.
Yeah.
And we may not be able to completely fix that one piece of it.
Yeah.
We may just have to decide what makes the most sense and move on. The thing about fees is true of any of the changes we make. There's not really anything in the vested rights that would invoke that very much. But for a lot of plat amendment, there is normally a fee, and the town's just going to have to add that. But the town is supposed to be maintaining a separate fee resolution that covers all the planning and building fees together. And that's set up by resolution so it can be adjusted annually and adjusted when they change the building. The county is in charge of the building code fees. And so the town has to change as the county changes. That's just something the council has to deal with. The planning commission doesn't have the power to mess with fees. But you can say, hey, council, you got to deal with this.
Great. Thank you for the discussion. You're off the hook, I think, here, Lee, now.
Yep.
The
only thing I would say is that I feel like we're wandering around in the details here, and I am concerned that we're not getting to stuff that's actually more substantive and more important in the long run. That doesn't mean we don't have to deal with the details. We do, but
right.
I think the reality is that we would all, the town and a lot of landowners would benefit if we got this minor subdivision thing resolved, and then getting that resolved would liberate us to go on to talk to some issues. John and I had a long conversation about that.
Yeah, I'd like to prioritize the minor subdivision for next month.
So. We have some big issues that we are not getting to while we wander in the weeds here.
Okay. Noted.
With that, I will take my leave and let you guys do your short-term rental.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for walking in the labyrinth there. Next on the agenda is we're going to go to a public hearing on Sarah. What's Sarah's last name?
Langlo.
RSTR proposal in Lower Boulder. So let's.
It's not in Lower Boulder.
I'm sorry.
Okay. So let's.
What document would you like me to put up of Sarah's?
Let's put up. Good question.
There's about a dozen of them, practically.
You'll need to come to the.
Right. Well, we're going to discuss. Let's put up maybe the overall site plan, I suppose. Hopefully, those who are commenting on it have had a chance to look at all the documentation online. After the public hearing, we'll discuss the details. So,
I'm opening the document, but it takes a little time. So,
okay. So I'm going to open up the. I'm going to make a motion to close the working meeting and open a public hearing on the Sarah Lang. Help me.
Langwell
RSTR proposal.
Okay.
Someone want to second that?
Second that, Colleen.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Ben Hughes, aye.
And Carlson, aye.
John Vereth, aye.
Okay, am I sharing yet? I've got the document up.
Not yet.
Okay, hold on.
Sarah has she's here at the table, and she also has a statement she wants to make. Just so okay. That you know. Okay, that she can make her statement or just okay.
Oh, yes, please. Yeah.
Make this as short as I can. My name is Sarah Langwell. I'm here tonight to ask you to consider my application for a short-term rental permit for my 700 square foot one bedroom home in the Lower Boulder division. At least that's what I'm calling it. I hail from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and have explored, lived in, and loved the desert and mountain Southwest all my life. My love for the Escalante staircase began over a decade ago on a chance road trip and continues to this day. After spending some extended time in Boulder, I knew right away, this is it. This is where I want to be. Staying, I learned, as has many a newcomer, is an adventure and commitment like no other. With a small budget and 2 years of intense searching, I had the incredible luck of landing on the 1 acre parcel I now have, which I purchased in 2016. In 2018, contractor Doug Howland agreed to help bring the dream of a small home here into reality. This gritty labor of love ultimately resulted in the sweetest place ever, a place I sincerely want to call my full-time home. But the adventure continues. I have a complicated family and work situation that requires me to be in Albuquerque some of the time. Trying to be present in both places has been a real strain on my resources as well as my income. Being unable to commit full time to either place, I've made it my overriding priority to be here. Though the tide is turning slowly, allowing me to spend increasing more time here, I'm realizing my resources need some realignment in order to make my goal of living here full time viable. I'm not looking for a real estate boom, and this is not my forever money-making plan. I'm just looking for a way to get from here to there when my situation changes. Nevertheless, in the interim, this is a solution which assures I won't end up effectively locking myself out of my own home with a longer-term rental, especially because I'm actually the one who's here the majority of the time. It also ensures continuous oversight and maintenance of my home, which would otherwise periodically be empty when I'm not able to be present. I expect and understand there will be concerns from my neighbors. If the tables were turned, I would certainly feel the same way. Because my place is so small, generally accommodating only 1 to 2 people, and because I will be there more frequently than any short-term guest, I feel confident its impact, if any, will be negligible. Because I deeply desire to preserve the same quiet, tranquil, well-maintained space as my neighbors, I hold myself and potential guests to the highest standards as outlined in guest instructions and written in accordance with the Boulder short-term rental ordinance. As is apparent in my application documents, the access road to my property is on an easement, which is actually on my neighbors, Ray Nelson and Denise Pennington's land. I or any potential guest exit this road onto my property well before any encroachment into their residentially used outdoor space with large fields, at least for now, intervening. I have already paid for and executed road repair with improvements at their request, and I intend to continue to do my fair and proportionate part in the maintenance of the section of the road I've used. I intend to screen guests for oversized vehicles and to exclude these from any booking. I know this would be important to my neighbors, but it is equally important to me. I've already participated both in actions and monetarily for the care and maintenance of our shared road and adjacent properties. I always strive to be a good neighbor with or without the prospective short-term rental in the picture. In the process of fulfilling Boulder's short-term rental application requirements, I've come to respect the care with which they were developed. They reflect a vision to maintain Boulder's unique character in the face of change. And change inevitably does come, as this community well knows. I'm cognizant that I myself am a small force in that change, though certainly not the first nor the most consequential. I feel my circumstances align well with the intent under which Boulder's short-term rental ordinance was written, and I therefore ask you all for approval of my application. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Any other comments?
I have comments. I believe I submitted them. If it's appropriate to speak on them now.
Please.
First, I'd like to say that Sarah's application appears to be very complete and well done. However, I've got a couple of concerns. The property managers that are listed are Sarah Langwell and Doug Howland. If the house is rented, that means that Sarah will not be in the area. That makes Doug the next in contact, and Doug lives out of town. Doug is not available when Sarah is out of town. Who responds? Timely response is not likely in this case, especially if it requires someone to go to the house and immediately. I don't believe this is acceptable. My next comment is, who is responsible if an accident happens on Sarah's right-of-way easement? This includes her portion of my driveway, as well as the rocky, uneven portion of the train that's just south of her property line that is part of my property. The town should require Sarah to provide a legal release of responsibility for any accidents that may occur on the right-of-way easement as a result of town approving the conditional use permit. Sarah should accept responsibility for all accidents that may occur on the right-of-way easement in order to release me of any liability, as well as the town's liability. You might want to check with the town lawyer on this matter. My third comment, Sarah has stated that she would contribute to the maintenance of the road right-of-way and easement. There needs to be documentation that Sarah will contribute to the maintenance of any damage or degradation to the right-of-way easement, since she is contributing to its use and degradation.
Is that it, Ray? More?
That's it.
Thank you. Any other comments on the Langwell RSTR?
In the hearing section, right, with no Planning Commission comments necessarily?
Correct. This is just public hearing right now.
I had a comment. Do you want to let Sarah answer? I think that it'll be asked by the planning commission.
Sorry, was that a comment? I missed it if it was.
Mark is going to comment now.
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is just a general comment about Airbnbs in general, is that I'm pretty concerned after watching what's happening over Wayne County and in the rest of Garfield County, Escalante and Panguitch is all having trouble with Airbnbs. We've chosen to have those under certain circumstances. And I just want to say in general that I want to see you guys try to run a pretty tight ship on these Airbnbs and not start letting the ship kind of drift into deep water. So I think you should be pretty clear about some of these things that Ray said about who's going to be responsible for the property when there's renters here and there's nobody right on site to look after these situations. I can't remember. I thought that that was a requirement of the Airbnb. Maybe I'm wrong, but these are just general comments. I think about Sarah, her project, but I think we need to really stay pretty firm on the regulations and drift off. That's all I've got to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark.
Jennifer has a comment.
Hi. I'm just wondering, just in relation to, we know that there's just a housing shortage here, and I know it doesn't really relate to the Airbnb, but just a comment, wondering if Sarah has contemplated, she mentioned in her opening statement that she's only here for some of the time. Wondering if she's thought if it would be possible for her to arrange the time that she's here to correspond with, so that basically her place could be used as a seasonal rental for somebody who lives here that could use it as a real house instead of just using a short term. I don't know if that's beyond the scope of what we're doing here, just sort of a question. Thank you.
May I comment on that just quickly?
Yes.
I just want to say I actually had a section that I took out of this statement because the statement was getting long, but I'm really aware of that. And I think that, for me, consideration of a 1 to 2 month time dictated by Boulder's standards of rents and needs is, I would love that, is the problem with me is my schedule is kind of erratic, but I had that in my statement and I took it out for time, but it very much so. I think it's a great idea for a lot of people if they're interested is to make space for rental periods that are dictated by Boulder's needs and norms.
That sounds like a no, Sarah. Can you just clarify that? I mean, I realize your schedule is erratic. I'm just saying, is there a way that maybe you could accommodate that? 2 months doesn't really qualify in my mind as a seasonal rental. Just wondering if there's a way. Anyway, your house is great, all that. I just would love to see something on the seasonal rental be able to be happen. Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Okay, any other comments?
Judy Drain has her hand up.
Go ahead.
Hi. That was one of our stipulations when people with short-term rentals, that's why we made it to where you have to live in Boulder if you're having a short-term rental because of those kind of problems. When you're not around, there's got to be somebody that can take care of problems, as Ray commented.
Bryn also has a comment. Bryn Brody.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, I would just like some clarification, just because I've looked at the short-term rental wording a little bit. I didn't look at it before I came just tonight, but I guess I was thinking that there's two ways to have an ADU or to have a short-term rental, but basically you can either live on the lot and then have a separate dwelling that has plumbing and electricity and everything to be legal, or you could you know, live somewhere else in town and then have a second lot where you have a house. But I guess I was thinking that if it was the one lot that you, if you only have one lot in town, that you kind of had to have a house for the person who owns it and a separate house for the short-term rental. I might be confused about that, but I'd like some clarification. Thank you.
Yeah, Bryn, just so you know, let's take that question offline. This is really just a public hearing, the statements about the Langwell RSTR in particular, but I can answer that for you after the meeting if you'd like.
Oh, well, I mean, it is in particular because it, my understanding is there's just going to be one residence there.
You know, yeah, can I just say that I think this will come out in the discussion with the Planning Commission?
Okay.
I think that's appropriate.
We'll discuss it.
I don't see any other hands raised. Anybody else? Okay.
I have another comment. I've made several comments, and I'd really like to hear some responses on those comments officially from the town.
We will respond to all these comments after the public hearing.
Okay.
May I clarify something that Ray said? Yes. I just want to say that Doug lives 15 minutes away, and this is our preliminary plan based on, you know, whether this passes. We're working with her daughter for a management system, and I've talked to a couple of other people in the community who may be interested in helping with being the boots on the ground nearby.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Donna Owen?
Yes, I'd like to make a comment on that. Whatever the plan is, it has to be a solid plan that is finally controlled so there are no problems.
I'll speak when you want me to, Matt.
Okay, go ahead, Donna.
Yes, I know Sarah, and I know her to be very diligent in what she does and very conscientious. And I know that if she needs to have someone a little closer than Doug, you could put that to be a condition that you pass it through to the town and she could find someone before the next meeting. I myself would probably volunteer to be a closer person if she needed it. I don't want to speak to all the rules and all the, I have not read all of her application, that I trust the Planning Commission to be fair, not based on emotion, not based on what people think or not think, but based on the ordinance and all the work Sarah has done to try to address everything that you wanted. And that would be my comment.
Thank you, Donna. Anyone else?
Jennifer Geerling.
I don't have any more comments. Oh, sorry. I don't know why that, anyway, nope, no more comments.
Okay, if there are no more comments, last chance, I'm going to close the public. I'm going to make a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll second that, Tina Carlson.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elaine Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John, aye.
Okay, thank you. Now, let's start by going through the questions raised by the public. Number one, let's see. So as far as it goes with property management and the owners, the ordinance states that that the, I'm just looking at it right here. That the man, where is it? The manager or owner has to be able to respond to the guests by telephone with 1 hour and be available in person within 3 hours. So that's what the actual ordinance says.
And in regard to trying to keep the number of Airbnbs to a more appropriate situation for Boulder and keeping more options open for short-term rentals, I believe that the ordinance has a percentage for each of the three areas. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so I'm assuming that this is within those guidelines.
To Ray Nelson's second comment on the liability of the right-of-way easement, I'd like to hear what the Planning Commission thinks on that.
This is Tina Carlson, and I would say that that's an agreement that because it is a right-of-way and a private road, not a town road, that it needs to be between the two parties, would be my comment.
I agree. This is Colleen.
Okay, any other comments on that?
I'm trying, what does their ordinance say about driveway access? I'm trying to remember. This is not commercial, so it's under the RSTR, and I don't think the ordinance says anything about rights of way. Mm-hmm. Could somebody clarify that for me?
Yeah, being that it's a private driveway and not a town dedicated road, then it becomes the issue between the owners themselves. So that's how I was reading it too. Okay, so help me out, guys. What were some of the other comments here with?
I'd like to know what is like. Is there an insurance or something that you're dealing with as far as opening this? You're opening a business that has people coming into your home. So, I mean, the whole liability thing.
My understanding, you know, whether it's PRVO or...
You should come up here, sorry.
Because this is, I'm Sarah Langwell. My understanding, and I've not gone there because this is an application, the entities that rent like VRBO and Airbnb do require or at least offer and encourage an insurance on my part for, you know, instances that happen on the property, which I intend to have.
And some homeowner insurances can cover that too. I'm not sure how that works, but. Okay, so what were the other comments? Planning Commission, help me out, that we need to cover. Bryn's question.
I think Tina had a question. You didn't ask her.
The liability.
No, the percentage of Airbnb.
Yeah, that was this application was reviewed by the zoning person, so that was one of her checkoff.
Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that.
I don't know what was said.
That's one of her checkoff points for. Putting this up to us as far as the percentage wise. So I'm assuming that would be the case.
Yeah. Yes. And so this is part of Lower Boulder since it's south of the highway. And there are four allowed in Lower Boulder, and there are potentially two. One of them is the renewal for the Julians. That would be two, and this would be the third.
Correct.
So I have a comment. This is Colleen. April actually sent comments. Peg, do you have those?
to go along with each of these applications. And I was wondering if anybody had that as far as her comments, because she went through all three of these and I did not print that off. And I'm wondering if anybody has that because she is the zoning administrator. Peg, do you have that?
Let me look and see. It's one of the things I forwarded to you guys, but I'm not sure I saved it off.
Okay.
Available for quick
grab. There's one thing I didn't print off either. But all I'm stating basically too is even if we don't have that, like I don't think that there was anything on there. Do you have that? As far as what April wanted, what more she wanted from April. I mean from Sarah.
Okay, I found her email. Let me just read. Let's see, there's actually a couple that she sent here. When was the application? Then April said that Sarah would need to apply for a business license, but that can be done after approval. She's aware of the requirements. Not sure if that's what you're referring to.
That is what I was referring, because April is the one that went through the application as the zoning administrator, and she did have a comment. And I was just wondering if that, I knew there was something, and I think her statement, if it could be read, because I think that was one of them, was that she needed a business license. And you were reading it, Peg.
Yeah. And that's a simple matter. Once she gets a conditional use permit, she just applies for a business license to the town, and that's strictly an administrative matter. You guys never see that.
Okay. I just wanted to, thank you.
Okay, so basically I want to make sure we cover all the public comments, but I'm not sure I tracked them all. Can Planning Commission help me out if I haven't covered them, please, before we go into more discussion?
I just have a comment. I think you've talked about, have you talked adequately about Ray's comment? That was the larger comment. Mark had a generic comment about short-term rentals in general.
Right.
Jennifer was wondering about the possibility of considering a longer-term rental or a seasonal rental. Judy right. Drain stipulated that that's one of the reasons why the ordinance says what it says about living is the property management. Bryn had her question about wanting some clarity on what it is. And Donna...
I'm sorry, Peg, I don't mean to interrupt, but this is Tina, and Bryn's comment was whether or not it was required for the Airbnb to have or the property to have a place for the actual person who is setting up the Airbnb. And I'm sorry,
So no, the according to the ordinance, the property manager or owner has to be available within 1 hour of a phone call and within 3 hours of responding personally. So they don't have to be on site if that's what she's asking.
So Brent, it has to be the person's primary residence, but they don't have to live there all the time.
Primary means they have to be there 6 months.
Yeah. Okay, so I had one question for Sarah, and that was one thing that wasn't addressed in the application was is there a barbecue or outdoor fire pit that's going to be utilized on the property?
I have one there right now, but I have no intention of making it will be gone. I don't want that worry or that risk.
Okay, because that's one of the things in the ordinance is that needs to be up to, posted and fire coded, if you're going to deal with that. So
I'm aware of that, and I have no intention of having an outdoor.
All right.
We're asking about...
I'd like to just make a comment also if I can. One is regarding the road, the portion of the road that I share with the Nelsons. My understanding it is an easement, and I would hope that there's a precedent for how responsibility for any accident is handled here. Of course, I take responsibility for what would happen to my guests, you know, on that section of road, but how that's actually handled, I would think there's some sort of precedent. Okay, that was the comment.
Matt, you were asking about Ray's comment. I
think that was addressed. I think we've already addressed this. I understand the ordinance to say that I need to be present in Boulder half time, and that I do not rent my residence more than 182 days out of the year. I expect to be here more than that and renting less than that, because I'm the one who wants to be here. I really don't want to rent it. It's just something that is one solution that I can come up with to make my messy situation a little bit easier for a while.
Matt, if I could finish what I was going to say, that was his.
I can't hear what's being said. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But my point is, Sarah made a very good presentation.
Good. Yeah. Whoever's talking, come to a mic. I can't hear this.
Can't hear me now?
Was that you, Shelley? No, I can't.
Yes. Okay. I'm just commenting about what Ray had said, and I think Sarah did a great job of presenting her side and so on. And I was just reiterating the things that Mr. Larson said about concerns. And the only one I don't think, I think Sarah can easily put this in her agreement, but her private road, that's her issue. But he was talking about the liability on the share road. And if that share road has any kind of damage to it that caused something, then it's another kind of a liability. And that's what I saw he was concerned about. Thank you.
So, and what kind of liability is that? I'm not following. It's still a liability between the two private owners, right?
If I can make a comment there, this is Ray.
Please.
I'm talking about both cases. If the road's not maintained properly, if Sarah has not taken care of her portion of the maintenance, and also just the fact that she's licensed to bring the public across my right-of-way, her right-of-way, it puts me at risk. I don't want that risk. And that not only on the driveway portion of it, but on the south side, the right-of-way is up over the hill that is full of boulders and rocks, and people can go out there and get harmed on it. They can trip over the rocks, they can fall on it. I don't want to be responsible for any of that. I want her to take the responsibility for that. And if the town gives her a license to do business there, they're assuming some kind of a responsibility in their action of opening my driveway to the public.
May I comment?
Now let's keep this in the Planning Commission for the moment. I would like to hear final comments, any extra questions from the Planning Commission on the review of this application.
I would say that, this is Tina, I would say that there has been no discussion based on this ordinance of liability on roads, and we have a number of other Airbnbs that have also been set on private roads. So I don't know how to go forward with this other than, as Ray says, I mean, it's not in our ordinance to make that decision at this point, I guess I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't know what the liability would be for the town. Perhaps the planning commission could ask the town, but we don't have anything to go on there.
Okay, so at this point, are there any other comments? Okay, then at this point, I'd make a motion to pass the application. If you want to add conditions, now is the time. And so we'd need a second and then a discussion on that.
I'll make a second. This is Colleen.
Okay, are there any conditions that any of the planning commissioners would like to impose on the existing RSTR?
This is Colleen, and I have no other conditions that I'd want to put on this RSTR.
Me neither, Elena.
Okay, then.
I just said me neither. I'm good with it.
Okay, then let's take a vote. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Verath, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Okay. So, and so it's just the business license needs to be signed and worked out. And then
Yes. We're
set with that.
Yeah, that's a separate matter that she'll have to take care of before she could open. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so next item on the agenda is to, and this is more administrative, it doesn't require a public hearing, is the Troy Julian RSTR renewal. I forget when we originally approved it, about a year ago or so. And at this point, having reviewed it, the Planning Commission, are there any comments, questions, concerns on it?
This is Tina, and I'd like to say that I think renewals, unless there's a clear reason to not renew them, that maybe the zoning commission, zoning administrator could deal with renewals of this.
Yeah, and that's a separate discussion we'll have in a minute, because I'd like to make it an administrative thing, unless there, but we'll discuss that in a minute. But heard, Tina. So any other comments on the Julian application renewal? Okay, so then I'll make a motion to renew that RSTR application.
I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor or any discussion? Okay, all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Actually, Matt, can I ask you a question real quick about it? How often are the renewals supposed to happen?
Once a year.
Once a year, okay.
And part of the reason for that is since there are a limited amount of RSTRs, if something is not being used and there's a waiting list, then those people will cycle out. And or, and this goes to Tina's question, if there are neighbor complaints, then it does need to go before the Planning Commission to reassess if it's in accordance with the ordinance.
Okay, just wondering, because I think when I read it, it looked like it was granted more than a year ago, like 2 or 3 years ago. So I was just curious how often the renewal needed to happen.
Yeah, and that's part of just not catching up with the administrative thing. And at this point, not having a overload of not having, we don't have a waiting list at this point. So,
Okay. Cool. So then, Elena Hughes, aye.
Yeah.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John, aye.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so let's just have a quick discussion, like just a few minutes about PEG. What would be, how would we make this into administrative detail, the renewals themselves?
Well, the application for renewal would come into the zoning administrator as it did in this case, and the zoning administrator would go through, make sure that there had been no complaints. I assume that she and I would communicate on that because most, well, April and I both got emails and sometimes we were copied on each other and sometimes not. So we would just clarify that we had gotten no complaints registered from any neighbor or other person. And if there were absolutely no complaints, then I guess the zoning administrator could just approve it at that point. Okay. If there were complaints, then it would go to you guys.
Okay, and do we need to make it public somewhere where the public can make formal complaints so that's at least, quote, advertised?
And I think that's one thing that I'd like a little input from the Planning Commission on. You and I discussed a little bit that we can certainly make public the fact that you can make a complaint and here's how you do it, and put that on the website. But it's one thing to put it on the website and another thing for people to be aware of it, right? So right. I'm not sure how people are to be made best aware that they have this capability of. And these wouldn't be frivolous complaints. These would be substantive things that actually were causing most likely a neighbor some real difficulties. So I think we still do have in Boulder Town Ordinance the fact that if you, for enforcement, in order to have something enforced, you have to sign a complaint. It can't be an anonymous thing. That's the only real stipulation I can recall. But I don't know if you want us to just make the rules or if you guys have any input on that.
This is John. I've been desperately searching the ordinance here. I love American Legal. I'm going to make this at least a more general comment I'll probably make later, but right now the problem is that the ordinance says that for a renewal CUP application, the owner shall provide a copy of stuff. Let's see where it is. No, right there. It's specific. It has to be put on the Planning Commission agenda right now. So it says for a, no, I misread it. The ordinance does not require that it go to the Planning Commission. So this could be an administrative choice. I misread it.
Okay. I think, I'd prefer just to leave it up to you, Peg and April, to figure out how that works.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Peg or whomever. I know in the past we haven't had like waiting lists for how many people we have, but if we did, would the scenario be that if someone tried to renew and someone else was applying, that you can compare those two situations and pick one? Or is it the person that is applying for the renewal has kind of first right of refusal?
I was thinking that was in the ordinance that if you, I mean, it's like a conditional use generally does follow on until it's revoked. So I would say under that scenario, the person who has the RSTR has first dibs of renewing it. And if they didn't fall, if they weren't complying or whatever, then it would have to, they'd have to fall off the list and it goes to the next person on the waiting list.
But they're responsible for the renewal, I think.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. So if they fail to do the renewal, then they can, and there's a waiting list, then they'll go to the back of the line.
That makes sense to me, yes.
Yeah.
I guess I feel fine with it if you guys end up handling that. I wonder if it might be possible for us to have access to some sort of, either you guys let us know when you decide to renew one or not, but it'd be useful to know how many are available in each section at any given time. It'd be nice to be able to look that up.
Right.
Someplace.
This is Colleen and I have a comment. So the RSTRs that we got, the first two RSTRs were right next to each other, and it was Alex and Anselm, and then Elizabeth and Troy. And that was 2 years ago in January, I think, or right after the first of the year. And so that was 2 years ago, and they came up last year. And Peg did mention that because, and I talked about it too, because I knew, like with Matt being the committee chairman, that those were coming up and there wasn't any problems with them. And so I do remember talking about them when, and this is the second year that they will go into effect, the ones that we, those two RSTRs. Do you remember that, Matt?
Yes.
So okay. To answer your question, it does come up, you know, Peg, we talked about it, and I think, Matt, you'll probably remember next year, oh, by the way, did those renewals come in? And Peg will give us the information or let Matt know, and yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah. So I'd just like to make it a standard practice, administrative duty, and then the PC is, you know, at least communicated to with what's going on with that.
Yeah, this is Peg again. April and I have talked a little about it. We'll have to get with you about, I mean, number one, notification to people who have. We notify people of business licenses to renew them. I don't recall that we don't typically notify anyone, but I think the Rester CUPs are, in fact, a kind of a one-off of most conditional use permits in that they are required to be renewed once a year. Most conditional uses go with the land until there is some kind of a complaint. So,
right.
So probably we do need to come up with some procedure to actually remind the people who have viable RSTRs in operation that they do need to renew. And if they don't within a given period of time, then it's considered lapsed. And then the waiting list takes effect if there is such a thing at the point. But we'll have to come up with those kinds of rules and just run them by you guys, I think, and then get them posted on the website, probably under the Planning Commission. Another tab under the Planning Commission would be conditional use RSTRs, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So people, okay.
So go and look at that.
Great. Thank you. Okay. We're going to move on the agenda here and move on to the Fogle Fuller preliminary subdivision. Now, just as a start here, we didn't have 10 days notice for the public hearing, which won't be till April. So we're treating this as sort of a conceptual subdivision. And so let's see, let's start with, I don't know if you want to make a statement, Fogle Fuller, about what you're up to, and then where I'd like to go after that is for the Planning Commission to just sort of review, go through the basics of the preliminary, and make sure, you know, all your ducks are in a row. And then next month we'll actually go to public hearing, discuss, and vote on it. Sound good?
Yeah, this is Anson. Should I speak now? Is that all right? I originally assumed that I would just read our entire cover letter that we submitted with the application. I recognize that it's late, and everyone might need to use the bathroom. So I'll leave it at the Planning Commission's preference. I can summarize the nature of our intent in our application, or I can read the bulk of the letter at your preference.
Why don't you just give us a summary right now? That'd be great.
Okay. Hi, I'm Anson Fogle. My wife, Alex Fuller, is sitting here as well. We've owned two 10-acre lots on Lower Boulders for 4 or 5 years. That used to be Bevan's Old Place, for those of you that would know it as Bevan's Old Place. These lots were originally subdivided along with the Kelly's lots immediately to the south of ours by Bill Muse. Our intent to subdivide it has two particular goals in mind. One is, and is more significant to us, is that the original lot boundaries are nonsensical. In fact, after consulting with our attorney, they're illegal. We're not sure how Mr. Muse was able to subdivide them in that way originally, but we have two 10-acre lots. We have a single family home that was Bevan's that we've remodeled and live in, roughly centrally placed east to west on those two lots on Lower Boulder. We have a building permit and are under construction for another house on the second lot on the eastern end of the property that borders the National Monument. First, we would like to readjust the boundaries so that they encompass the structures in a sensible way. Currently, they do not. Secondly, we would like to take the far western end of the pasture, carve that out and sell it to Nick Vincent, who lives in the house now, and rents our basement along with two other locals that we rent long-term to. We do Airbnb the upstairs when we're not there. So that's our intent. Nick's a longtime local, and we would love to give him a piece of that land that he's been helping us take care of for the last 4 years. So that's the intent. We have gone through the ordinances in exhaustive detail, both just practically reading them over and over, and as well as consulting a land use attorney. And we believe that it complies, and we've done some things to make sure that it meets compliance, but that it complies with the ordinance for subdivisions, specifically minor subdivisions. In our cover letter, we address the various issues. In brief, two of the three lots already have single family homes either existing or permitted and under construction. We have a permitted productive well, as well as Boulder Farmstead, quote unquote, town water running to those two lots. We have existing permitted installed septic systems on those two lots. And we've built over the years a road that goes along the southern boundary of the land and services all three of the lots. The lot that we would add would be 5.4-ish acres, so that Nick could build his own house on that land. We would owner finance it for him. It abuts Lower Boulder Road directly and therefore has access to utilities, etc. It would likely pass a perk test. The Kellys just got a permit for a septic system about 400 feet to the south. We don't see that as a problem. In the letter, we do go into fairly exhaustive detail about the different subdivision requirements. We had questions for the Planning Commission about firefighting requirements, which we think we meet, but there are some gray areas in terms of what's required there. And it wasn't clear what the fire protection requirements are. We did meet with Pete Benson when we got the building permit and reviewed that. And he agreed that it was satisfactory, but we would love some guidance on that. The Kellys are under construction in a house immediately south in that same pasture, and they own the 10-acre, very long, narrow strip to our south. We share an access easement with them that goes about halfway down the property. We would need to put in a road sharing agreement. I guess we wouldn't need to, but we would be interested in putting in a road sharing agreement so that all of us share maintenance of the road equally between the three lots. I think that's it. I tried to make it fast.
I was muted. Okay, thank you, Anson. So now I think, you know, what questions the Planning Commission has for the Fogel Fuller subdivision is now the time to ask them, but let's try and do this in somewhat of an organized fashion. And, you know, what we're looking at is from the preliminary subdivision set up in the ordinances. And, you know, we have all your information, the site plan, the plat, the title tax, and so on. the questions come up with necessary services, which I think is important, is, and I think you've addressed some of them already. The first one is culinary water. You have access on lots, what I'm looking at it, 2 and 3, and you can tie in on lot 1 with that, with Boulder Irrigation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. For your question about fire protection, it looks like actually, according to the ordinance, that you need the fire marshal to write off on it. So I don't know if Pete Benson is on this call. I can't see the screen. Are you here, Pete?
Can I speak for him? This is Tina. We talked about it before I left. And yes, it's definitely, he has to sign off on subdivisions.
Okay, so there's paperwork that needs to be done with Pete. Okay, so part of playing this as a conceptual is hopefully it'll give you some more information so we're complete for next round. And I apologize, our zoning administrator isn't here, which makes things a little clunkier for us, but we'll try and work it through. So the other two things that I recognized, at least in the ordinance, are it looks like there needs to be something from Southwest Health on how you're going to deal with the wastewater. You have septic on the first two, but I think it needs to be noted on lot 1 about, you know, yeah, it's going to perk there, but you might get more specific on that.
Yep. This is Anson. We assume that after this preliminary that we would take your direction, but there are a handful of things that we assume we have to do. One is get a permit from the Southwest Department of Health or Environmental Quality, which we would anticipate. Okay. We would also need further paperwork talking about the separation of irrigation rights.
Right. And that's with the Boulder Irrigation Company.
That's correct.
Okay. Stormwater drainage is also a concern that's supposed to be showed, I think, on the plat, how it works.
We addressed that in the letter. We addressed that in the letter. We've got culverts installed and addressed that in the letter that deal with stormwater drainage. We've also built berms and a fair amount of infrastructure to deal with the movement of water. I believe we meet the requirements of the ordinance.
Okay, no, I do see that. Yeah, it should be addressed but not necessarily on the plat. Okay. Other planning commission questions as we go through this, as you guys have reviewed this application?
I have a comment. This is Colleen. I went through and looked at everything too, and I realize that this has been a project that they've been working on since 2021. It's been a long process, and from what I see, I don't have any problems. I think that, again, April had comments on this, and I think that everything that I've seen looks good. And on lot 1, I think if they're going to sell that property to Nick, he's the one that's going to have to go to Southwest Health and have the perk test. Is it he, or will it have to be done before they sell it?
This is Anson. My reading of the ordinance, and it could be wrong as I'm a layman, but my reading of the ordinance is that I do need to demonstrate to your commission that it will perk. So I believe I need to get a soils test and a pre-approval, as it were, from the Utah Department of Environmental Quality, which yeah. I'm happy to do that.
I think that's correct, because Nick is only like allowed to buy the lot if it's all approved and subdivided. So it needs to be by the subdivision applicant.
That's correct.
Correct.
So I had another kind of funny comment. I noticed at the, and I'm not sure, I didn't see it on this plat map, but you've used the word minor subdivision. And I would like to see that word minor taken out of everything that you submit, because we don't have minor subdivisions. We're trying to create one right now. And I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but I think whatever you do, you should take that word minor out.
Yeah, I mean, technically it's a preliminary subdivision. Oh, we just have sort of one subdivision law right now. It's just a technicality.
Yeah, that's all it is.
And it looks like, you know, when you get Pete on your property, you know, then he'll look more closely and can give us the information on the surface of your road, turnaround dimensions and all that sort of stuff. But that's a real necessary step that you should take. So we have that information and hydrants and all that.
Yeah, this is Anson Fogel. I expected that I would need to do that and look forward to that. I'll contact Pete and make sure that that's addressed prior to the next hearing.
Okay, so for me, I mean, if I'm tracking stuff right here, and, you know, there are basically three things. There's the fire marshal, there's Southwest Health, and there's the irrigation company signing off. For that's the paperwork that the PC is going to need in order to go to public hearing and discussion on that. What else are you guys seeing, Planning Commission?
John here. I think this is a well-prepared application. Thank you for getting all your ducks in a row. I think it's really helpful when someone does a good job like that. I also see that this is exactly the sort of thing that is consistent with the general plan, creating an opportunity for another person living who's been in Boulder to live here. So I'm very supportive of what you've proposed. I think it's, you know, with the items that Matt has spelled out, we should have something that should be relatively straightforward.
I've got two comments. First of all, kind of similar in the same vein as John, I would like to really applaud you guys for what you're doing here. I think I have a lot of respect for this. We talk about doing this type of thing in town a lot, and very few, or in my time in town, no one has done this. And I really think it's a great thing. Nick is a really valuable young member of the community, and I think it's really great that you guys are doing this for him. So I'd like to just publicly applaud that. The other thing I'd like to point out that isn't necessarily Planning Commission specific, but might be good for you guys to think about is just in Lower Boulder and staying in Greenbelt, if you wanna maybe consider upping the acreage of Lot 1 a little bit, that would make Nick's life easier, taxes in the long run with Greenbelt. So just something to think about.
This is Anson Fulight. I'm not sure whether I should respond to each, but Elena, that's a very good point. We've discussed that, and at final, we may alter those boundaries for that purpose. On the other hand, we're not interested in continuing to irrigate it heavily as productive pasture. Okay. So there's some debate about our intents with respect to land use, but that's great advice, and I really appreciate everyone else's comments.
And one last thing, Anson, is that along with the Boulder Irrigation Company, and I guess I'm unaware of the difference, but with Boulder Farmstead and the culinary water for Lot 1, you're going to have to get their approval, I guess, too, or work with Jimmy on that.
So to address that, this is Anson again. You're saying that that I need to bring some sort of documentation from Boulder Farmstead that confirms the viability of their supplying culinary water to Line 1. Is that correct?
Correct.
Understood.
Okay, then. Any final comments? Okay, so thank you for presenting that, Anson. Sorry you had to wait till the end of the evening. And from there, we will see you next month, and got enough on your plate, I'm sure. So thank you.
I actually do have a question real quick. Anson, can you just confirm for me that road that goes down is a public road, meaning like a county road, a town road?
No, not at all. It's entirely private.
It is. Okay.
It's taken me years to build it. It didn't exist at all when we purchased the land. It was a sand track to the first house, and it's private. We worked out an access easement with the Kellys that goes roughly to the barn, which is roughly mid distance on the property.
Okay.
But the road resides entirely on our land and is entirely private.
Okay. Well, then the only thing, and I hate to do this at this point, but to bring up there is, it doesn't mean it's entirely impossible because of the minor subdivision thing we're doing, but it's my understanding, since I'm going through a similar process right now, that each lot in a subdivision needs to have frontage to a public road as it stands right now. We're working on changing that in the minor subdivision ordinance, so that's coming soon, but as it stands right now, I believe that to be true. Does anyone else have, can someone confirm that?
Yeah, no, I'm not quite sure on that. I think I'm looking at the ordinance under roads. Uh-huh. And
I'm pretty sure of it, as it's one of the things holding me up right now.
Can I just say this, is that the lot that's being subdivided, you're right.
The whole thing's considered the subdivision. Yes. Each lot in a subdivision needs to have access to a public road. And I was thinking, for some reason, because someone had told me somewhere along the line that driveway of yours was a county road, but if it's not, then that faces the same problem. And it's not a total non-starter. Like I said, it looks like we're going to change that. But it's not changed yet. And we're changing it for this exact reason, so that projects like this can happen.
This is Tina. Yes. So the driveway into there went to lot two.
Yes.
And that lot three is an addition, and lot one is addition. So one not being a problem because it's on Lower Boulder, but perhaps that is something we need to visit or research a bit more than that.
So Matt, what about the Kennedy subdivision? Those lots don't all have access to, do they? Okay. I'm just thinking out loud,
Well, let's relook at the street thing just to make sure I'm not clear on that. I had a different perception on it, but right now I'm trying to squint and look at the codified laws. And so, Anson, let me.
Matt, 153-190 frontage required. It says every lot shall have frontage upon a dedicated or publicly approved road or street, or right of way providing direct access to a dedicated or publicly approved road or street.
This is Anson Pogel, if I may.
Please.
We've reviewed that. That sentence that you just repeated, Elena, is quite important, but does not say that it needs to be a public road. If you read the question, and we consulted with counsel. In fact, a significant portion of the subdivision, small subdivisions in Boulder wouldn't exist if you interpreted it to mean that. That sentence uses the word or. I'd encourage you to read the sentence again, but our interpretation of it is not that it requires a public road, but that it requires a dedicated road.
Yeah, we've been, and again, I really don't want to be dropping a bomb on this, but we've been discussing it because it's been up in terms of, I'm familiar with it because of what Dylan and I are trying to do. And it's been decided by Lee and others that it reads that basically, so the way, because it's near you, so you know it, basically the lot I'm trying to do is, Dylan's on the road here, I'm not. So as it stands, I'm blocked out and can't be accessed. So it, you might be right that it could be interpreted differently, but currently as the town's interpreting that, it means that every, and there are plenty of homes in Boulder that don't comply with most of the ordinances, but that's because a lot of the ordinances came after a lot of the homes in Boulder. And so it is exceedingly hard to have new ones.
Yeah.
But,
I think this points out that there, you know, there is a lot of urgency to getting at least some changes through town council on subdivisions quickly. I agree fully with everyone here. I think that's a high priority. And it's also why I think, I'm so cautious about unintended consequences that an ordinance gets written and tries to solve one problem and causes another. Because we have two contradictory provisions. One basically says that it's got to have frontage on a road. And then the other one says that we've got considerable discretion with a lot of subdivisions of four or fewer lots. And then we've got past town practice, and each of them is inconsistent with the other. So yeah. This is why I think we do really need to get that straightened out. But when we have to be really careful about putting in restrictions into ordinances without thinking about what those things could cause down the stream. So we'll try to work on that.
Yeah. I think the good news is that the only hiccup we see with your project is one that that should be changing soon. And we can try to confirm. I can do some talking to Lee too. We can try to confirm after this meeting in enough time to figure it out for the next one, if that is the case. But the way we've been talking about it, and roads and streets do mean town roads and streets that are plowed by the town, maintained by the town. It shouldn't be that way, which is why we're changing it. But currently it is that way.
Can I make a comment? There's a difference between the old ways that they originally did this town way back when and what we've got to confront now. And it is basically a public safety issue. It's getting resources to the back lot and water, propane, if a fire. So that's kind of why we're facing a different kind of road issue in the area. And I think this is just another one that we're going to have to face. They're going to be individual, and we'll have to make individual decisions on each one that comes up and how that road is put in and how it can be assets. So that's my comment. Thank you.
So, Anson, let's work with April and the Zoning Administrator. Let's look at that street language more specifically and figure that one out, and in between. And then other than that, we'll go from there, unless there are any other comments. I'm not clear on that myself. So I think we need to get maybe Lee to weigh in on it and figure that out.
So Matt, this is Peg. I'm going to go ahead and schedule a public hearing then for April.
Yes.
And
I can I just say that I think that we need to resolve the road thing before we go forward on any kind of jump. Can we resolve some stuff before we, and that would be, I don't think that if this road change needs to happen, it has to go through the ordinances, which needs to go through public hearing, then to the town council through public hearing. And then, so, I mean, are you talking about a hearing on this subdivision, or are you talking about, I mean, I guess we could have a condition that says that it's okay if it changes so that the lot, three is actually allowed to have a street or the road to go into it, which is not on a public street. So
two isn't either, right, Tina? Or are you saying?
Yeah, the two is already, I don't know. That two is, yeah, I guess to allow two and three is, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Even though it's, yeah.
I think we can base it on a condition for now. I mean, we're going to be focusing on the minor subdivision next month, in particular. In the meantime, I myself am not clear on the language, even though I'm listening to what everyone is saying, because I'm reading different things here under that 511 or whatever. Sorry, I can't get the numbers.
It was originally 50 was the ordinance.
Yeah. 50. It's a private right-of-way may be used to access up to four lots provided such private way right-of-way has direct access to a dedicated or publicly approved road or street.
You're reading.
Yeah. I mean,
what's the title of the ordinance you're reading, Matt?
I'm under concept subdivision plans, under, I'm trying to get back to the heading, under H5, subdivision roads and streets.
Okay. Yeah, there's this is Anson again, there's H5 public road and streets, and then within, and then ordinance 15.041 section 4.
Correct.
And in both cases, I've consulted with a land use attorney, and it says dedicated or public, which she clearly interprets, and I think that was probably the intent to mean that you had to have an adequate dedicated road access to the lots, but that it need not be public. It doesn't say public and, it says public or dedicated.
Yeah.
But then the town defines road, street, and right of way as town roads.
But that's not the way the ordinance reads. I feel like our job is to meet the specific letter of the requirements with respect to the ordinances, and that's the way the requirements read in both of those sections.
John here, I think a couple points. One, although we, in a case like this, where we're working on a new ordinance, a proponent, Anson, is entitled to have his project reviewed under the current ordinance. Yeah. If we disagree with his interpretation of whether that is, that road along the south meets the requirement of being dedicated, he has the right to appeal our decision through the appeal process. So he's I think we are obligated to process his application under the current ordinance. And if we deny it, he's entitled to appeal our decision again, according to the what's in the current ordinance.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And yeah, Anson, I hope you know, I'm totally not trying to hold you up. I'm just trying to point out that it might be better to wait for the other one, because I've been playing this game and getting the door closed because of this same thing for many months.
Yeah. This is Anson Fogel again. I appreciate that a great deal, actually. We also made the decision through a fairly careful analysis process, including the town attorney in Moab, who we used to consult about it. And our conclusion was that the current ordinance quite clearly allowed the subdivision. Now, there are the questions that the Planning Commission has laid out additional requirements, which make perfect sense. However, I would love to hear from the Planning Commission holistically if the Planning Commission as a group interprets that ordinance to mean that the road needs to be given to or managed by the public. That seems unlikely, but I'd love to hear other specific discussion about the language in the ordinance that we don't meet.
One other comment before we drop this. I see Jim Cadmo's comment about 500 feet from fire hydrants. And as we learned with Stacy Davis's house, there's a real disadvantage to being a long way back on a road away from the hydrant. So that's something that, again, I think Pete's going to be the one who will have to make the definitive call. but it's something that should definitely be addressed one way or the other when you come back on your final submittal.
Yes, this is Anson Fogel again. I expected that to be the most salient subject with respect to carving that lot off because of the ordinances and the way they're written. That is something of a gray area, and it seems to leave a lot of discretion up to the fire marshal. So yeah, I would expect to continue to pursue that, talk to Jim, and with respect to fire, talk to Pete. But yeah, with respect to roads, I did, that was an unexpected interpretation.
As I say, I think you're entitled to submit as it is and argue with us on your interpretation or present the evidence that your attorney has. I think that's going to be helpful if he just presents it.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do so. Is it fair to ask the commission at this point to give me a preliminary sense of whether you as a group believe that the road is non-compliant?
Speaking personally, not as consensus, I'm not clear on it at this point. I need to do some research. So Elena has been, well, I'll let you speak for yourself. So that's where I'm at. You guys want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I'll weigh in. I think it'll be very helpful if, since you have already consulted with an attorney on this and he's offered an opinion to you verbally, it might be very helpful if you ask him to put that in writing and include his opinion of the ordinance interpretation with your submittal.
Yes, I'm happy to do so. That sounds good.
I would say, this is Tina, and I would say that this issue came up, and I think it is similar, and I don't think the decision was made Elena's situation was very similar, in my opinion, and so this has been an issue that we've been talking about for a while, and I never understood why it was put into the ordinance in the first place, but I think it comes down to the street, how well the street is. If it can provide fire truck access, if it's maintained. This has been something that's been ongoing since 1996. So, it's surprising that it's still an issue, but the street issue is something that the Planning Commission needs to clarify as far as subdivision.
Okay, any last comments? Where we are, where we're at. And so, yes, I still think we should put on the agenda for a public hearing next month. And then, and if you provide all that paperwork and so on, Anson will be ready to go and deliberate from there. So.
Sounds good. I appreciate your time.
In the meantime, yeah, if there's also a possibility of working with Lee Nellis for more clarification, and I can work with you on that, on how that ordinance is read. But I think John's statement was really accurate. It'd be great to hear from a written statement from your lawyer. So
thanks again for your time.
Yep. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. So I guess our last, before we do business for next month, let's open it up for final public comments. Is there anything else in the agenda, Peg, or is that it?
That's it.
Okay. So I'll make a motion to open the meeting for final public comments, statements, please. Yeah. And
you don't need a motion.
Oh, okay. So it's open.
I think Donna has her hand raised and Junie Drain also does. So,
yeah.
Donna?
No, that must be left over from the last comment. I have no comment. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Judy Drain, did you want to say something?
In that land use class we took, they brought up this thing about the roads and how important it was to get the language right. And they gave a sample of exactly what Anselm's talking about, and it had to do with either and or. And when it came to or, it was pretty well the way that he said it. And that was from another land use attorney. So just wanted to comment on that.
Thank you, Judy. Jennifer, did you have your hand up?
Yeah. I just wanted to have the Planning Commission just confirm here what I've just been hearing. Sounds like Anson has obtained an attorney that has given him a legal interpretation of the ordinance that says that he should be good to go based on the wording of the ordinance that you have now. My understanding is that Elena and Dylan came to you earlier and you came to a very different conclusion. I would like the Planning Commission to say, if you okay and go forward with the Anson Fogel, which I don't have any problem with it because I agree that it needs to be written. But if you go ahead and do that, you need to really consider that other people who come before that you make it, you make sure that they get okay. To me, this is just a great example of young people who come in, who don't have the resources, who don't have the ability to go and get attorneys to defend them on things like this. They don't have that. And they have been pushed back and and roadblocks, and they haven't been able to get their deal through, which is something that the Planning Commission should have done, like they're doing right now for Anson. Basically saying, okay, you've got an attorney, give us his opinion. And I just feel like, wow, you guys need to just really step up and say, okay, we're going to make sure that this happens for the other ones, because you guys have put those other folks through, Dylan and Elena, through just pure hell. And this is totally uncool what's happening here. I totally for Anson and Alex to get this and have this, but I think there's a real double standard here. And this is why young people can't do it. You are expecting them to crawl over walls that are okay. Dan is looking at me and laughing, going like, okay, Jen, just like relax here. Anyway, thanks for listening. Just reconsider, double standard here. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna breathe now. Thanks, everybody. Okay, that's it. Bye. Thanks.
Thanks, Jennifer. Any other comments?
Hey there. Nothing you guys haven't heard, but just echoing the statement, this has been months and months of work and us trying to figure this out and going to everyone we can try and do. And we were told an answer that completely upended what we were doing, and we spent money we didn't have, and we put a lot of time and effort into this. So to have it then be something that can be just shooed away and we can move forward, I think it's awesome. I want Nick to get this. I want this to be a model for people to be able to be here. But it's just a little bit frustrating sometimes when it feels like, yeah, there's just one process and then another. And we've really been killing ourselves to do this the right way. So just want to put that out there, that it's not encouraging for people who don't have the same kind of finesse with the system. So we're just trying to figure this out. And this is a little bit frustrating on our end. So I know you guys are doing your best, but it's a little bit painful, I have to admit, bittersweet, but I'm glad that it's going to work for you guys. And I hope that more people in town consider doing something similar. I hope there's a path for it.
Thank you, Dylan. Anyone else?
I feel strongly that I have to comment in the fact that, you know, I feel the struggle that the voices I have heard. I don't know these people, so I am not biased in any way of anybody in Boulder. The thing that I always look at as Boulder is we're all a community. And to me, what we're discussing is a safety thing. If we can't get water to that back lot, or if we can't get a police officer or an ambulance, that's a love of Boulder. We love everybody here and we want them to have access to it. And we have never said that we don't support this project. And it is kind of a tough everywhere we go of things and how we've got to have things checked off anymore. But that's our concern. And I hope I made it clear we haven't even made a decision. I love the project. I love the fact that these people are trying to think outside the box and everything. But we do have to go by the law and what the town people respect their position, and that's what they're trying to do for them, for everybody. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, everybody. It's heading on 9 o'clock here, so I'd like to close down the public comments and finish our business for next month and adjourn. So what do we have on the table for next month, Peg and Commission? We have a minor subdivision review. We have a public hearing for Anson Fogel. What did we decide on vested rights, John?
Looking at my notes.
Yeah, okay. On vested rights, Lee and I were going to work offline and try to come up with either a consensus draft or two options.
Okay.
And so we were going to schedule a public hearing on it also, right?
We felt that would be, so we have about a week and a half, 2 weeks to get that put together and get it to you for the 10-day notice.
Yes.
Okay. And the boundary lot adjustment is moved on, right?
We were going to do a clean draft.
Okay.
That'll not need a hearing. Right. Just making sure we've got a clean draft that's been completely wordsmithed before we send it to town council.
Right. Correct. So you'll take a vote on it next time, but you won't. Yeah.
Yeah.
That should be an action vote.
And Matt, when you, the first statement, the minor, you're talking about continuation of that same minor subdivision that you've been working on the past few months.
Yeah, that we tabled for this round, but is actually a real priority. Considering what we just talked about too.
Right.
And I was supposed to talk about housing in April. I think we're going to have a full plate.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be busy working with Leah on these draft ordinances. So let's move that, not put that on April.
Okay.
I think that's it for now. Okay. Yeah. Good.
I'll make a motion that we close the meeting.
I'll second that. All in favor? Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
John, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Okay, everybody, thank you for all the valuable discussion and have a great evening. See you next time. Thanks.